Carrie Janelle is a music historian, writer, and author of 5 books on American music, a Grammy nominee, and is also the winner of the ASCAP Deems Taylor Award and a 4-time winner of the ARSC Award for Excellence. His latest CD project, Bob Dunn, Master of the Electric Steel Guitar, is available in the exhibit room at the Origin Jazz Library booth. L plug. This is Carrie's 9th presentation for ARSC. The talk he has prepared for you this year concerns one of the most successful radio formats ever heard here in the Los Angeles area. And to paraphrase KHJ's Bill Drake, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Carrie Janelle, and the hits just keep on coming on.
The hits just keep on coming.
And so the official title, because we have to have an official title for the record, KHJ, the Boss Radio Revolution of the late 1960s. Ladies and gentlemen, let's have a rousing for Carrie Janelle.
Okay, let me just get the first one up. Welcome to Los Angeles, all of you out-of-towners. Okay. I also would like to have Sam Riddle join me up here on the dais. Sam was one of the very first, the original boss jocks that joined KHJ in 1965, so. Sam has a very successful career in television these days. He was the creator of the Star Search show, so he hasn't really thought too much about radio in his radio formative years in many years now. So I'm going to be Ralph Edwards, and This is your life, Sam Riddle. Lights, please. The format known as Boss Radio got its start at KYNO, a small radio station in Fresno, California, that emphasized a more energetic approach to radio during the early 1960s. The brain trust behind the KYNO sound were radio consultants Bill Drake and Gene Chenault. When Drake and Chenault decided to try out their new Top 40 format in Los Angeles, they triggered a phenomenon that has reverberated in radio ever since. Georgia native Philip Yarbrough had taken on the moniker Bill Drake to rhyme with WAKE, Wake Radio, the call letters of the station he worked for in Atlanta in the late 1950s. Although he didn't create Top 40 radio, Drake realized that programming had become lax, with excessive disc jockey chatter, long-winded station ID jingles, and excessive advertisements cluttering up the airwaves. Drake's new Boss Radio format, as he called it, emphasized music over talk, characterized by short, punchy jingles, brief disc jockey breaks lasting no longer than 12 seconds, a disciplined approach to music programming, and a machine gun-like efficiency in its on-air sound. In early 1965, Drake and Chenault were hired to save KHJ Los Angeles, a radio station that had become a financial and ratings liability in recent years. Drake's vision ended up dominating Los Angeles radio for the next 5 years and changed the face of Top 40 radio forever. This is Boss Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, the beat goes on.
93 KHJ.
And that was the voice of Bill Drake. In those years, the AM band ruled the radio dial. The two top radio stations in Los Angeles that played rock music at the time were KRLA and KFWB. Both stations had seen better days, and Drake was convinced that the Los Angeles market was ripe for the taking. KHJ, owned by RKO, was at 930 kilohertz on the dial, strategically well located in the middle of the AM dial. Its signal covered the entire Southern California landscape like a blanket, but its middle of the road format was stagnating, losing $750,000 every year. Drake and Chenault approached RKO's president with their idea and got the go-ahead to not only develop their format, but to have complete autonomy without corporate interference. The first thing Drake did was hire a program director, the field sergeant, who would have direct control over the day-to-day execution of the format. Ron Jacobs had battled Drake and Chenault in Fresno when he was program director for Kino's arch-rival, KMAK. The Hawaiian-born Jacobs honed his talents as the youthful program director of KPOI, KPOI, in Honolulu. Arriving in Fresno in 1962, he turned KMAK into the number one station in town, utilizing a series of circus-like promotions and contests, inspired after watching Elvis Presley's manager, Colonel Tom Parker, operate. At KMAK, Jacobs met a young, quick-witted announcer named Bob Morgan. Realizing Morgan's talent, Jacobs thought that Robert W. Morgan had a more musical rhythm to it, so he changed his name to that, and instructed all of his announcers to never use the word morning on the air again. They were to always use Morgan. Jacobs would bring Morgan to LA to anchor the new KHJ lineup as its morning DJ, or as they became famously known, boss jocks. There was great anticipation in Los Angeles when Drake and Jacobs started working on the new format. They hired a staff of disc jockeys who practiced on KHJ FM, where few people were likely to hear them, and a KHJ newsman, however, in hopes of getting hired at KFWB, leaked information about the format, which led to KFWB starting to use the term boss radio themselves. Furious, Jacobs decided that, ready or not, KHJ was going on the air with boss radio that afternoon. He instructed music director Betty Brenneman to drive down to Wallach's Music City, pick up a KRLA playlist and two copies of every record on it, and bring it back to KHJ. By 3 o'clock that afternoon, they were ready, and boss radio went on the air. To inaugurate the format, a promotional jingle was broadcast on KHJ. The jingle had been recorded at a studio on Melrose Avenue, down the block from the KHJ studios. New boss jock Roger Christian, who was the co-writer of the Beach Boys' hit Little Deuce Coop, convinced Brian Wilson to permit KHJ to use the instrumental backing of the song to introduce the new KHJ and its boss jocks to Los Angeles listeners. The boss jocks, none of whom could sing, recited Ron Jacobs' lyrics in rhythm to the music, backed by a chorus of professional studio singers that included new Beach Boy Bruce Johnston and producer Terry Melcher.
It's the new KHJ. You don't know what we've got. When Los Angeles goes now, it goes all the way. KHJ. We know that you'll go for the new KHJ. It's the sound of success. Boss radio in LA. KHJ. It's the new KHJ. And here's what we've got.
I'm Robert W. Morgan, and I'll be starting your day 6 till 9 every morning on the new KHJ.
My name is Roger Christian. You have an invitation to join me 9 till noon for some rock and relaxation.
And every day at noon you'll hear me, Gary Mack. Remember that name. Mack, Mack, Mack.
In the afternoon, baby. Except no substitution. Get the real Don Steele and wipe out air pollution.
When the working day is done and you point your car towards home, just dial Dave Diamond and you'll never be alone.
From Hollywood to Go-Go till 12 o'clock at night, Sam Riddle is the man to make your day end right.
If you listen late at night till the morning shadows creep, a guy named Johnny Williams might be talking in your sleep.
It's the new KHJ, now you know what we've got.
KHJ's chief of production was a genius named Bill Mouses, who was responsible for producing all the jingles, promotional spots, and contest segments to be used on the air. Mouses had been at KHJ since 1951 and became the most valuable member of the boss radio team. He had complete control over the sound of everything that went over the air and was singularly responsible for every promo, every contest announcement, and every jingle that was broadcast. Mouses, now 88, talked about Bill Drake's strategy for his new format.
Well, they shortened the jingles to start with. Made those just one, two-second jingles, a cappella. Here you had on the opposite side, you had KFWB with those one-minute jingles. Well orchestrated, well done, but long. And Drake found we didn't need that. We needed music. Drake, you gotta understand, you know. Drake was a man who wanted to hear a lot of music, not a lot of talk. Now, if you had something to say on the air, fine, say it. But get it over with and get on with the music, you see?
With Mouses working in the studio, Bill Drake hired choral director Johnny Mann to compose the KHJ jingles that would become an intricate part of the format. Drake wanted to do away with the lengthy jingles heard on KFWB and KRLA, and thus no KHJ jingle would be longer than 3 seconds. Mouses helped Mann equate the balance between the male and female voices, of which there were five, and then re-equalize the jingles, adding just enough echo to brighten them. Mouses recalled mixing the new jingles.
I did some radical equalization that if you said you were doing this to the sine wave, a chief engineer would call you crazy. But I combined it with the echo chamber. I combined it with a little compression. And then we went with it.
One, two, one, two. Robert W. Morgan, Roger Christian, Gary Mack, the real Don Steele, Dave Diamond, Sam Riddle, Johnny Williams, Frank Terry, Johnny Mitchell, Tommy Vance, Scotty Brink, Steve Clark, Bobby Tripp, Humble Harv, Tom Mall, Charlie Tuna, Bill Wade, Shadow Stevens, Mark Elliot, Jerry Butler, Pete McNeil,
Danny Baxter, Sparks,
the Big Kahuna. God bless Tiny Tim.
Jingles were created for any and every circumstance, reflecting transitions between slow and fast songs, coming out of news, station breaks, and special programs. Many featured the stentorian voice of Bill Drake himself, who respectfully directed the jingles to the ladies and gentlemen of the listening audience. Eventually, the Drake jingle package was adapted and exported for other cities in the US using the KHJ format. The jingles, music, the boss jocks, promotions and contests, and a first-rate newsroom resulted in a format of continuous kinetic energy. Harvey Miller, whose on-air name was Humble Harv, joined KHJ in 1967 and became one of its most popular boss jocks. Miller and Bill Mouses talked about what made Drake's format work.
The whole idea of his format was forward motion.
Yeah.
Forward motion.
A big word with Drake was clutter.
Yeah, he
that
couldn't
was a
stand
big
it.
Word.
Yeah. To him,
get rid of clutter.
Yeah, to him the idea was that people were listening to KHJ and would listen to it for the music.
Yeah.
And then the disc jockey.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you had the music and the disc jockey together in a symbiotic kind of thing, then you would have a superpower station.
The boss jocks were subject to daily critiques by Ron Jacobs, who was always listening, taking notes, going over Hooper ratings, and making suggestions to improve their performance. Jacobs distributed regular memos to the jocks that ranged from cheerleading great performances to chiding sloppy work. He encouraged excitement, sincerity, and warmth from the jocks, and expected nothing less than perfection in their on-air performances. The pressure on the jocks was enormous, but the format that Drake designed worked from day one. The energy never let up, and the momentum of the format steamrolled over the competition. Morning boss jock Robert W. Morgan was irascible, impatient, and a perfectionist. Occasionally, his frustration would surface during his show, but he always managed to cover his mistakes with his barbed humor and sardonic wit.
If that record doesn't end up number one in the Boss 30, I want to get out of the business and go back to law school and sue somebody, man. Put me on Glenn Campbell, written by Jimmy Webb and Wichita Lineman. I just may play that again in the next 7 or 8 minutes. 7:18 now with Robert W. Morgan on the Big 93, and Ford is going to... is 10 again!
Ladies and gentlemen, he has successfully blown this $50,000 slogan three times in 4 days. Ford is the going thing for 69. I am a liner. Ford is the going thing for 69, and two reasons are two new ways to go Mustang. Ford is the going thing for 69. For openers, Ford presents the Mustang Mach 1. It has a spoiler on the rear end, can you dig it? An optional Cobra Jet V8 up front, and racy looks inside and out. And then there's another luxurious addition to the Mustang line, the new Mustang Grande. Boy, I'm glad I got my tongue notched. Grande. This one is a real dream Mustang, loaded with features and better ideas that Ford cooked up just for 1969. Let one of the two new Mustangs happen to you. They're on display right now at your Ford dealers. Ford is the going thing for 69.
A rite of passage and a badge of glory for any KHJ listener was to be Morganized by Morning Man Robert W. Morgan.
Sound good? It tastes even better. Stouffer's.
Good morning, KHJ.
Good morning. I'd like for you to Morganize my husband.
I didn't wake you up, did I?
No, you sure didn't. Okay. He's a carpenter out in Canoga Park.
Yeah.
Now that it's summer, he's wearing shorts, and he's got these legs you wouldn't believe. He looks like a chicken with shorts on.
You ever seen my legs?
No, never have.
Listen, I have great legs.
Oh, really?
I didn't even notice it myself till I went on television. Everybody says, man, you've got great legs.
Very good.
Yeah, but I don't wear shorts anyway, because they clash with my cowboy boots.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, what's his name again?
Roy Field.
Okay, Roy Field with those funny legs. Zap! You're Morganized.
Robert W. Morgan.
All right.
93 KHJ.
It's 8:23 in the morning from Boss Radio. Presenting Scotty Brink at 9 today with $6,000 to give away.
He's free as a breeze.
The afternoon drive slot was owned by the real Don Steele, who became one of the legends of top 40 radio broadcasting. Steele was fast, frenzied, frenetic, and funny, cranking his studio monitor up to eardrum-shattering levels during his shift. Steele probably enjoyed his celebrity status more than any of the other boss jocks, as Humble Harv and Bill Mouzes will relate.
He was Hollywood.
He was Hollywood.
He was the epitome. He was born and raised in Hollywood.
Yeah, he went to Hollywood High.
He went to Hollywood High School.
Yeah.
He was the epitome of what old Hollywood was.
That's right.
A star.
That's right.
Steele was a radio star.
That's right. That's right.
Probably when he was 4 years old.
Yeah, yeah. And he acted like one.
Damn right.
I mean, he had that strut. He had that.
Damn right.
That confident strut.
He had a cockiness to him, man.
Yeah.
He had the look, the feel, the touch. He was it.
But you know, it was a cockiness that didn't offend you. There's a difference.
Okay? Absolutely.
The real Don Steele, 93 KHJ.
Gonna be jamless today, man. I tell you that morning, you're in front at KHJ now. 304, the real Don Steele show, $5,830 in that jackpot.
The real Don Steele's most famous catchphrase was and always will be a mystery. But the exuberant shriek, voiced by an actress named Carolina Newton on countless Steele shows, became his trademark.
Shop for the most, for the best, for the least, huh? Always shop at Ralph, certainly. What do we know and believe? Fun folk!
Tina Delgado is alive! Alive!
93 KHJ!
Certainly! Patchouli Clyde for the Boss 30 on $1 million weekend. Pat, anytime you're ready, honey.
My love is warmer than a...
To his dying day, Steele never revealed who Tina Delgado was. Bill Mouzes was his engineer.
Steele was a showman. Pure and simple showman. He was a Jerry Lewis, you name it, a Jack Benny, a Steve Allen, anything. He was it. He knew how to take a particular thing and exploit it to its fullest. The Friday night sign-up was a classic.
The Union Gap, more great talent on Columbia Records.
Tina Delgado is alive!
93 KHJ.
Better believe it, baby. You certainly, you better hit them over the real Don Steele show. I want to congratulate all my Grand Prix finalists this afternoon, like Gary Kuhn and Teresa Arevalo and Shirley Havener and Charlie Duda is next for Sam Riddle at $1 Million Weekend, and he's going to be laughing it all night long, and we're going to be out there. You know exactly what we're going to do. Get that happy butterfly and that neon fun jungle. Get to the back this Friday night out there, and we're going to get it out of our system, let our hair down or whatever, whatever, man, express ourselves in some manner to really do kind of a socio-economic aspect of today's life. Right? Late Trayvon, Drake, Dan Trace, Old Rude Days, whatever you ways. Marvin Gaye, Francis Fay, Ruth Olay, Anita O'Day, Albino Ray, Wardell, Gray, Gerhard Bay, Dan Duryea, Alexandra Hay, Alejandro Ray, Simone Signore, Hey Hey All The Way With George A. What I Say, Peter Huntington May, Michael Rene, Curtis LeVay, Johnny Ray, Dennis Day, and Conrad Hilton.
Well, you know what? You think I'm a dummy? Huh? You know what?
I'm gonna be, don't mess around with a lightweight, you know. It might come a time, you know what I mean?
A lot of the success of KHJ was the infallibility of the format.
Yeah.
It was going to sound the same with Johnny Williams at 3 a.m. as it sounded at 3 p.m.
That's right, that's right.
The difference was that when Steele stopped screaming and hollering and the mountain and Mount Rainier stopped exploding, who was going to come pick up the shreds? Me. You're looking at him, bro.
That's right.
I had to come in after a tsunami.
Los Angeles weather, cloudy with drizzle night and morning hours. Otherwise, hazy afternoon sunshine. Lows near 60, high near 70, light smog. In Hollywood, currently 67 at the beach, valley, downtown, and Orange County at 67.
93 KHJ.
About time, baby, I took your head and twisted it like this. So... Jimi Hendrix. Now, I mean, if you want to get together, this is how to do it.
Drake's format was designed to fit any boss jock, from the high-octane energy of the real Don Steele to the more laid-back overnighter Johnny Williams. Sam Riddle was also a consistently professional performer, working a variety of shifts, including early evening and late morning.
Sam Riddle, 93 KHJ.
Heidi Benesch of Los Angeles. Early this morning on the Johnny Williams Show said April 29. Her birthday matched up with a payday, and she's now $2,920 richer. Congratulations.
Bill Drake's mantra for programming the station's music was simple: play what's selling. As a result, every conceivable kind of popular music made its way onto the station's playlist. The mix of music was unlike any other in history. Black, white, country, R&B, soul, jazz, psychedelic, folk, instrumentals, remember them? Novelty, MOR, nothing was left out as long as it was selling. The bonding qualities of the jingles, promotions, and the boss jocks' delivery helped sell it. The weekly Boss 30 survey was introduced on July 9, 1965, several months after the start of the new format. The listings included title, artist, and label information, plus the song's previous position on the chart and its length of time on the survey. Up-and-coming records were labeled hit bounds and were introduced on air by their own KHJ jingle. The surveys were handed out free at local record stores. I used to pick one up every week coming back from school. Each included pictures of the boss jocks and ads for the current KHJ on-air promotion. In May 1967, the survey took on a different look as a rotating series of bright colors adorned a new psychedelic border. On Wednesday nights at 6 p.m., a countdown of the following week's Boss 30 survey was played, from number 30 to number 1. And I remember Sam Riddle counting down the survey, one survey in 1969, and I was rooting for Hawaii 5-0 by The Ventures to be number 1. And darn it, it made number 2, and I've hated More Today Than Yesterday by Spiral Staircase ever since. You should have tweaked that, Sam. So Sam Riddle and Humble Harv both had stints hosting the Boss 30 countdowns.
I introduced the top... The new Boss 30 list every Wednesday. I was listened to not only by kids, but the entire record industry listened to what, you know, that was a very well kept secret, what was going to be on the new Boss 30. Because if KHJ played it, ba-boom, all of a sudden everybody played it.
That's
but
right.
Guess what? Drake didn't just throw something on the air. and he didn't do it as favors. He used to be very meticulous about it, and Jacobs would simply take it in and put it on. He took the advice of Drake, and that was how. That's a, there was never a hint of payola. Never. I saw him. He told Sal and Martoni's, if anybody comes to sit next to me, he had a special seat in Martoni's. If any all the record guys come in, the second they start talking about their product, I'm out of here.
This sample survey from 1967 features Rock by the Doors and Procol Harum, Motown by Smokey Robinson and the Miracles, a soul instrumental by Booker T and the MGs. I just saw Booker T yesterday at the Grammy Museum. Country music by Glen Campbell, British cabaret star Petula Clark, Janis Ian's Society's Child, a protest song, anti-racist protest song, middle-of-the-road pop by Sammy Davis Jr., and psychedelic rock by the Jefferson Airplane. It was an amazing time for popular music, but Drake's format managed to draw all of these disparate musical forms together and make them work. Anything could get programmed, so long as people were buying it. Oddball acts, like the eccentric 20s revivalist Tiny Tim, became cult figures, with God Bless Tiny Tim becoming a mantra in 1968. KHJ's success prompted programmers and rival disc jockeys to try and copy Boss Radio's format and playlist. Humble Harv.
This is what people who used to come in from all over the world and get a hotel room for the weekend and sit and tape and tape and tape. We want to be KHJ. It's real easy, man. You go in and you go to a hotel room and you turn the radio on and tape everything. We're just going to imitate everything. And nobody could do it, ever.
I see.
The Real Don Steel, 93 KHJ.
And that probably was followed by the Rolling Stones on KHJ. The Tiny Tim promotion during June 1968 was interrupted when presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy was shot at the Ambassador Hotel. KHJ's award-winning 2020 news department was the first place many listeners turned to when they learned of the news. In the wake of the tragedy, while Kennedy lay dying, KHJ suspended its normal programming, going to all news, and then adopting a subdued, respectful music format of mostly golden oldies until after Kennedy's funeral. The station received commendations for its sincere, respectful reaction in suspending its normal programming. Newsmen Art Kevin and Jim Mitchell accepted broadcast journalism awards for KHJ's coverage of that event and other major news stories of the era, such as the 1965 Watts riots. KHJ's nonstop contests kept listeners involved on a day-to-day basis. Realizing that Los Angeles was an automobile-centered society, Jacobs offered cars as prizes or even contest themes. He also knew that Angelenos were always on the move, so contests often centered on events occurring in the Los Angeles area. The Location X contest challenged listeners to identify an iconic Los Angeles landmark by offering daily clues presented by the Boss Jocks to its whereabouts, delivered on the air. The secret location turned out to be this scene on the right, on the merry-go-round at Lincoln Park. Remember that, Sam?
No.
Hollywood celebrities became involved as well, including Batman's Adam West and Burt Ward, Star Trek star Leonard Nimoy, the man from Uncle's Robert Vaughn, who is the voice of Mr. Whisper, and the mysterious Laugh-In Laughers, who were revealed to be Joe Namath, Agnes Moorehead, and Tommy Sands. You had to identify them by their laugh. This contest resulted in the largest cash prize ever awarded to a KHJ listener, $7,000. Here are a few of the most memorable of these contests.
Live dangerously. Play Time Bomb on KHJ. Every hour it's your chance to win cash if your timing's good. When the Boss Jock says it's time to play, the money comes ticking your way from Boss Radio.
Is Mr. Whisper.
starting this Morgan on KHJ, the answer to that question is worth $1,000 in cash.
Who is Mr. Whisper?
Hear his voice and a clue to his identity this Morgan on Boss Radio. Boss Radio, home of continuous contests, presents the mystery of the Black Box. See this renowned receptacle for yourself. It sits in maximum security on the front lawn of KHJ, 5515 Melrose Avenue. And remember, whatever it holds is yours for the guessing. So get ready. Here is today's clue.
And then the jock would give the clue over this bed.
KHJ Black Box. Guess what's in it and win it. Stand by to speculate. Your chance to shatter the secret of the Black Box is coming up on Boss Radio.
And in case you couldn't stand it, here's the winner.
The mystery of KHJ's Black Box is solved. It happened Thursday when Bobby Tripp said to Lee Harris of Los Angeles,
"All you have to do is tell me exactly what you think is in it."
It's a trip for two to Huntington Hartford's Paradise Island.
That is right!
Oh, my God, are you kidding?
No, we're not, because the winners just keep on coming. Congratulations to Lee Harris. He's won round-trip airfares for two to Paradise Island as the guest of KHJ. We're also picking up the tab for Lee's expenses and sending him on his way with $500 in spending money. And now, stand by to enter the KHJ Grand Prix. It starts Tuesday morning on Boss Radio.
We just went right into the next contest.
We all live in a yellow submarine.
The Beatles set sail through perilous Pepperland, and you'll see it all at the first public showing of Yellow Submarine, November 13th. There's a pair of preview tickets and a copy of the Beatles' new double album, yours for the winning from KHJ. Just be first to phone the boss line at the sound of the sub.
He was the greatest promo voice I ever heard in radio. I don't think KHJ's promos would have sounded that way
if it wasn't for Morgan. I've always maintained that too. I really have.
Morgan was the epitome of a promo voice.
I see Frank Terry come in to do a promo, and I said, well, Frank's good, but where's Morgan?
You know? Morgan elevated the promo.
It's the way he interpreted it.
To a whole different genre.
He interpreted it to a picture of grandeur. This was it.
Implementing the format was one thing. Promoting it was something else. To keep KHJ's name and call letters in front of the public, Ron Jacobs created a series of ingenious publicity campaigns to promote the station.
See, what's never talked about is the ad campaign that they did, the billboards that KHJ had. This was Jacobs' idea. They bought tons of billboards. Remember that? Everywhere you went, man. And they went in the places that LA stations never bothered with. They went into Orange County, man. They went into Irvine. They went because they had a hell of a signal in the middle of the dial, 93. So you could see a KHJ billboard on the way to Bakersfield, man.
Sure.
You know, I mean, and all that stuff started to stick. All of it congealed. It was very hard work.
Bill Mouzes' productions for these stunts were as creative and inventive as the campaigns themselves, at a time when most commercial or promotional spots utilized only one music bed. Mouzes interwove different themes, sound effects, and voices to create a seamless symphony in miniature. The KHJ promotions were masterpieces of manufactured excitement, spearheaded by, in May of 1966, the coming of the Big Kahuna.
The Big Kahuna is coming to Los Angeles on May 23rd. Do not mingle with him without instruction from KHJ. Be ready for the Big Kahuna with your own Big Kahuna coconut. Keep it with you at all times. Get your Kahuna coconut by calling the boss line at the sound of the conch shell. When you hear the call of the conch shell, phone Hollywood 1-9353. For Orange County, dial 542-7295. First, a call at the sound of the shell wins a KHJ Kahuna coconut, mailed directly to you with the mark of the Big Kahuna.
good things come to Kahuna coconut holders, and you'll be cool with the big Kahuna himself when he comes to Los Angeles May 23rd.
The Big Kahuna was played by a friend of Jacob's from Hawaii, an actor named Chris Verez, who had spent time at UC Berkeley doing, and I'm doing air quotes here, research with Timothy Leary. Together, Jacobs and Verez created The Legend of the Big Kahuna, a fable that told how 93, of course, dolphins rescued this child of destiny who heads for Southern California in search of a stolen magic jewel. The staging of the Big Kahuna's arrival at LAX was something that Colonel Tom Parker would have been proud of. Boss jock Gary Mack did a live feed from the airport with Tahitian rent-a-dancers on the scene. After his big arrival, the Big Kahuna did the town, appearing at locales around LA, like Dodger Stadium, in full native regalia. Within a week, the name the Big Kahuna had entered the American lexicon, but Jacob's promotion didn't stop there.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Big Kahuna has the following announcement for those of you who have won Kahuna coconuts from KHJ. Do not husk your coconut. Keep it with you at all times. Soon, good things will come to Kahuna coconut holders. And remember, a coconut in hand is worth two in the mojo. To win your coconut, call the boss line at the sound of the conch shell. The Big Kahuna is in Los Angeles.
Look for a coconut on eBay. I wonder if you'd find one. Hold on. Winners of the Big Kahuna coconut promotion were sent actual coconuts through the mail, which served as their invitation to the Great Big Kahuna Beach Luau. The Big Kahuna promotion continued throughout the summer, culminating with a joint appearance with the Rolling Stones at the Hollywood Bowl. In September 1966, when the fabricated TV group The Monkees went on the air, KHJ was there to link up with the new supergroup. Their debut single, Last Train to Clarksville, was starting to climb the charts. So Jacobs decided to book a train trip with selected KHJ contest winners traveling from downtown LA's Union Station to the beach community of Del Mar, which was renamed Clarksville just for the occasion by its mayor. The Monkees were flown in to the Del Mar train station by helicopter and actually performed two songs live for the crowd, the first time they had ever performed in public.
Hi, I'm David Jones of the Monkees. The KHJ Last Train to Clarksville leaves Union Station at 12:30 p.m. on September the 11th. It's going to be a ball, and we're looking forward to meeting you. There's going to be dancing and dinner on the train, a beach party, surprises, and a chance to win one of four color TV sets. Every hour, the boss jocks will draw a name of another winner, so enter now. Send your name and address on a postcard to Monkey Trip, Box 38130, Hollywood. And now, from postcards received during the last 24 hours, here is the name of another KHJ Monkey Tripper.
When Harvey Miller, a.k.a. Humble Harv, joined the station in February 1967, Jacobs staged the Humble Harv Hello Happening, a veritable carnival held at the Hollywood Palladium, featuring sword swallowers, fire eaters, astrologers, a sitar player, belly dancers, the band The Sopwith Camel, and Harv himself, who was ordered by Jacobs to always wear dark glasses in public to enhance his cool aura of mystery. He later added a chartreuse narrow jacket to his wardrobe, custom made by a tailor who also outfitted the Temptations. Harv dispensed with that and threw it in the trash after he started seeing them being sold at Sears. Here is Bill Moses' promotion for the Hello Happening.
Hello, Los Angeles. This is Humble Harv. And dig what's going to happen February 18th at our Hello Happening. KHJ winners and their guests will dig Humble Harv's favorite groups in person.
From the San Francisco scene come the Sopwith Camel.
From the L.A. Underground, the Peanut Butter Conspiracy.
And celebrities and guest stars like you wouldn't believe.
So we won't tell you.
But you'll dig it all if you're a winner.
Be there, baby, by being first to call the boss line when you hear the Humble Harv singers and pick up on me and my sounds right here on KHJ Wednesday night.
All the boss jocks became instant celebrities. They were showcased at concerts, movie premieres, and personal appearances all over town. In some cases, they hosted their own shows on RKO's Channel 9, whose studios were in the same building as KHJ. Sam Riddle, who had already been hosting 9th Street West, also hosted a show called Boss City. Robert W. Morgan was the hip host of Groovy, and the real Don Steele also had his own eponymous show on Channel 9.
Drake was smart enough, and of course Jacobs was brilliant enough, to take advantage of Channel 9. After all, man, we were right there. Yeah. Stunning Sam did his show there.
Yeah.
Then Steele took over, and Morgan had. I was on Morgan's show, TV show, and Steele's show, and that whole thing of Channel 9. Steele had his own, and he would do a radio show and promote himself on TV.
That's right.
Yeah. So KFWB couldn't do that. KRLA couldn't do that. You walk, you know, 25 steps and you're in television land.
That's right. So, right across the hall.
Promoting concerts was always a big part of KHJ's format. Usually done in conjunction with the Hollywood Bowl, the Boss Jocks were at the scene for all of them, which ranged from the Beatles and the Rolling Stones to the Doors and Jimi Hendrix.
The experience of your life happens tonight at the Hollywood Bowl. In New York, in London, in Paris, and San Francisco, minds have been blown by the power and the glory of Jimi Hendrix. He's been called the world's greatest rock guitarist. They've been called the most together group ever. The Jimi Hendrix Experience. Tickets available everywhere for KHJ's climactic summer concert. The Soft Machine, the Heir Apparent special added attraction, Vanilla Fudge. And starring the Jimi Hendrix Experience. Get you. Let them transplant your ears. Put your lid and ignite your id. Tonight at the Hollywood Bowl.
Brilliant production on all accounts. The narration, the music, the effects. It's just amazing what Bill Moses could do in 30 or 40 seconds. The culminating work of Bill Moses' career as KHJ production chief was the 48-hour History of Rock and Roll, radio's first rockumentary, aired for the first time in February 1969. Here's a brief excerpt from the show.
The metaphoric wheel which started rocks rolling was made of an alloy strong enough to trundle the music from its sectional appeal to universal popularity. One element of this alloy was country music, another was traditional pop, and a third was folk. But the backbone of this old new music of the early 50s was rhythm and blues, and the Clovers were one of the earliest R&B groups. One of their records, in fact, introduced the saxophone to rhythm and blues. Ahmet Erdogan, then and now president of Atlantic Records, who wrote this number one record from the summer of 1951, describes its making.
Vocal groups in the early days were never used to anything but a rhythm section.
In 1969, Ron Jacobs decided to leave KHJ to help create the syndicated American Top 40 program. With him gone, the station coasted for some years, but never regained its legendary status. In October 1980, the success of Urban Cowboy resulted in KHJ's format being changed to modern country. Today, it broadcasts Spanish music. Still, the impact KHJ had on American radio was monumental. Humble Harv spoke about what made Bill Drake's Boss radio format work.
Here's the main reason it lasted as long as it did in radio. 5 years is long, man.
Yes, it is.
To have number one was a vision, a Drake vision that never varied. It was a straight road, never get off. Here it is. I don't deviate. And consistency. It was consistency with a solid format. And that was it. And if anybody said, you know, Bill, hey, man, here's what works. I know it's going to work. We're going to do it this way. And nobody ever got off the bus, man. That was it.
In 1973, Bill Drake returned to Los Angeles radio as a consultant for KIQQ, hiring Steele and Morgan as disc jockeys. After leaving KHJ, Bill Drake and Gene Chenault formed Drake Chenault Enterprises, which syndicated a variety of radio formats throughout the 1970s and 80s. I worked for this company in that building for 4 years. For Drake Chenault, Drake himself voiced the 15th anniversary edition of The History of Rock and Roll in 1984, and I helped edit a lot of the interviews that was used on that show. The company was eventually sold, and Drake retired from public life. He died in 2008 at the age of 71. Chenault died in 2010 at the age of 90. In August 1997, the real Don Steele died from lung cancer at the age of 61. The following May, Robert W. Morgan also died from the same disease at the age of 60. Both men had been longtime chain smokers from their years in radio, and both had received stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame for their achievements on Los Angeles radio. Ron Jacobs returned to Hawaii, where he wrote a fascinating book on his years at KHJ, containing hundreds of fascinating documents, memos, and memorabilia about Boss Radio. He sells it himself on his own website. If you tune in on your way home, you can still hear the Johnny Mann composed jingles on LA's top oldies station, K-Earth 101 FM, which have been adapted to the K-Earth call letters. In 1990, alumni of the Boss Radio format assembled for a 25th anniversary reunion. Many of the old Boss jocks were there to honor Bill Drake, Ron Jacobs, and the radio revolution they started. Robert W. Morgan was a keynote speaker.
And tonight we're here to celebrate something that happened 25 years ago today. The start of something Boss. A station that not only changed the way Los Angeles listened to the radio, but the way a generation of programmers programmed, copywriters copied, and DJs jocked. All across America, no station before or since has had the national impact that's even come close to that of 93KHJ. Boston had Boss jocks. Kansas City had a big kahuna. And Tina Delgado was alive from Lubbock to Lansing. Tonight we're going to meet the people who put it all together. And they've come together from Honolulu, Hawaii to Donaldsonville, Georgia. From Sioux City, Iowa to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. 25 years ago, we were the golden boys of radio, and nobody could change that. Those days were ours, and for those of you here who weren't involved, please forgive us tonight if we blow our own horns a little loudly. We worked hard to make it happen, and back then we didn't have a chance to sit back and savor the flavor of our labor of love. Our golden may have turned to silver, but our egos are still intact.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Sam Riddle.
I would like to have a round of applause for one of the greatest presentations I've ever seen in my life. Carrie. I want to thank Carrie for reminding me of many, 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 many things. First of all, I had hair in those days. The guys that I worked with were fantastic, fantastic professionals. My history of coming to KHJ was not planned. My plan was to go to KFWB, the number one station in Los Angeles. Because when I was a kid growing up in Texas, I wanted to be a disc jockey. And I, in 3 years of my early life, worked at seven radio stations from Fort Worth to Lubbock to Abilene to El Paso to Phoenix to San Diego, two stations in San Diego. And then I got to LA at KRLA. That was in 1960, mid-60s, when I was 19 years old. And my goal at that time, I didn't tell KRLA, of course, was to work at KFWB. I finally got to KFWB with the jingle, the singing jingle of color radio, da 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 da. It's all that I ever listened to all my life. 6 months after I got there, I got a call from a Bill Drake. And I said, okay, he's a listener, yeah, he's a fan, whatever. So I picked up the phone and he said, I would like to buy you a drink at Nicodell's. Nick Adele's was the restaurant that all the disc jockeys of Los Angeles went to in the early 60s, because you could also see every record promoter at Nick Adele's every single night, and you could also have a dinner every single night. It was the first time I met with Bill Drake, and he offered me the job at this new radio station. I had a TV show at the time that was on Channel 9 called 9th Street West. And when he started talking, it was like it was going to be a major promotion, that this was going to be something that had never, ever, ever happened in LA radio. So I said, yes. I didn't even ask how much it was. I really did not. I had no idea how much I was going to get paid. I just wanted to work for something that was brand new in Los Angeles. So I went back to KFWB 2 days later and actually resigned. And not, I couldn't tell them anything because it was sworn to secrecy. So I continued my television show every day from 5 to 6. Or in those days, I think it was 6 to 9, every single night on Channel 9. And when I would get off the air, I would go in. As Carrie said earlier, we used to rehearse on KHJ FM. We had numerous meetings on the format with Bill Drake and his golden, mellifluous voice saying, to, you know, okay, it's going to be now, ladies and gentlemen, the Sam Riddle Show. You didn't have any of those of Bill introducing. That's great. And then into the jingle. And then, of course, nothing but energy. And he kept going through, you got to have energy, you got to have energy, you got to have energy. Of course, those were really the, you know, the top 40 days of a lot of energy. So he would make all of us go around this huge conference table and give our welcome to the show after we heard our jingle. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the Sam Riddle Show, 93 KHJ, Los Angeles. So we would all go around the table. It was Roger Christian and everybody else, so the original boss jocks. And when it got to me, because I had a saying called Hello, Music Lovers. And in KFWB and every place else, I used to say, Hello, Music Lovers. And he said, No. And I said, Hello, Music Lovers. He said, No. I said, Hello, Music Lover. He said, No. Well, it turned out, and it was my opening every single show, and every single show I did. Hello, music lovers. This is Sam Riddle, and it's coming to you tonight at 9 o'clock on 93 KHJ Boss Radio. You think tonight's going to be boss? I got to tell you, this is going to be the best boss night of your entire life. Get ready. Here comes Wipeout, the surfer song on Boss Radio. And he said, that's it.
Does anyone have any questions for Sam? I had one. We heard about the real Don Steele.
Yes.
And Mount Vesuvius blowing up and everything. And how did you follow an act like that?
Well, when I first got on, Steele was 3 to 6, and I was 9 to midnight, so I didn't have to. But then they moved me to 6 to 9. When my TV show moved 5 to 6, they moved me 6 to 9 on the radio. And that's where I was doing the countdown every on Wednesday nights. And your question was, how did I follow him? I actually would not go into the control room. We were friends, but I would not go into the control room until he left, because the monitor was so loud. I could not. I mean, and it was just like the walls. Real Don Steele was on the air, the walls, the glass, we had a glass partition between us and the engineer who was playing all the records and all the jingles and everything. And that glass would actually do this all the time. So I would see him at staff meetings, and I would say to him in the hall like that, but the engineer would actually go in and turn the monitor down.
Do you remember the last train to Clarksville?
I certainly do. It was, I forgot that I did the Channel 9 thing. You just showed me a picture of that. Yes, it was, we had a great time. All the jocks went, and all these 12, 13, 14-year-old girls were just on the train with their mothers, of course. And when we got to last train to Clarksville, we walked out, and everybody ran out into the beach, and then this helicopter came in with the monkeys on it. And it landed right there, right at the stage. They had constructed a stage right on the beach, right off the tracks. and of Clarksville. When we came in, they had changed the name of the station to Clarksville, and I remembered most of the promos. I do remember one. Actually, I remember the black box, but you those. I'm sorry, I'm getting stuttering here. There are so many promos there. My God, I forgot all about that. And you're right; one followed the other.
That's right. They had a new one when somebody won a contest. They'd start a new one right away.
Yeah, exactly. Here, a quick story: the first contest that I did, that I was on the air, and I forgot. Here's trivia: what was the first contest?
I don't remember what it was.
That's the only thing you don't remember.
it's on the Boss 30s, though. So
it
I
is,
check
right.
It,
yeah. The first contest had not been won for like 3 weeks or something. And I was on the air. It was 9:30 at night, and the contest was going on. And it was a phoner, and the girl that was on, she had to answer the question. And I was doing my thing and everything. And when she answered the question, it was correct. And it was like something like $6,000, $5,000, which in those days was fantastic, of course. And I remember hearing her, and I said, I think she said it. And then I knew she said it, and then my voice went up about 10 octaves on the air. And when I said, yes, you won it! And then something else that was on the inside, there was a red phone in the control room. And Jacobs would send memos. Bill Drake would call the red phone. It didn't ring often, but when it rang, you know you better answer it right away. So it was Bill Drake and his deep voice said, Sam, let's don't get as excited the next time this happens, okay? Yes, Bill, thank you. Continue.
Thank you, Sam.
Okay.
I think we've been present at a special kind of presentation, and I'm glad I was able to be the person up here to direct the orchestra and give all of our presenters an extra little hand. Now go on out and get drunk on that coffee, okay?